Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Stephen Clark, Chelsea fan, on Twitter at Stephen Clark CFC.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan. You can get me on Twitter at @the_jersey_fits.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, I figure we should talk about Watford a little bit, because they did win today. That's 3 wins in 3, only behind Liverpool on goal difference. And we see this every season, a team or two that pop up pretty high up in the table, and then some of them drift, some of them end up having really good seasons. Bournemouth also currently occupying a top four spot. Oh, they may have just missed it with Chelsea's win, actually. But with Watford and Bournemouth both very high up the table, do you think there's any credence behind either their performances, and which one do you think will perform better throughout the season?
Yeah, I find it pretty interesting, actually, with Watford especially, because a lot of people that I was talking to had them tipped to be kind of in a relegation scrap.
Yeah, and I'll loan that. So, I had them as one of my bottom three.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did. I remember that. they just have this really interesting squad, Watford, and like I think they got a really interesting looking midfield and a lot of options, like people like Decore, obviously, and Nathaniel Shalabar, who missed a lot of last season through injury, and finally maybe we're seeing the best, starting to see the best of people like Will Hughes.
Roberto Pereira, who came with a very high profile and was just hurt for 2 years.
From Juventus, yeah, he's kind of shown his brilliance in flashes, but yeah, maybe he can get a full season kind of under his belt, and maybe they can have a really good year. I feel pretty good about Watford. I never really felt like they were going to be in trouble this season, and it's a strong start. I mean, nine points from 3 games. Yeah, you got to say that they've got to be looking to have a decent season then, I suppose. With Bournemouth, yeah, I heard a really interesting stat this week that they're kind of the team that has picked up the most points from losing positions in the last couple of years in the Premier League, which is a testament to kind of, I guess, the spirit in that side. And kind of, I can remember just off the top of my head quite a few games where they've come back from deficits. I think they're both really good teams, those two, and I think they started the season pretty well. Another team I think actually could have a surprisingly good season is Leicester. I think I just really like that team. I really like the players that they got, the reinforcements that they made. Someone like James Maddison just looks like a really, really good player. And Harry Maguire stepping up and scoring a pretty good goal this week. Yeah, I think they're on for a good season.
Between Watford and Bournemouth, I had both of them low. I had Bournemouth 18th. I think I had Watford like 16th. I'm looking dumb, but hey, it's early. I'd say Watford probably had the better chance of having a better season just because I like their squad a bit more. And they do this a lot. Last year they were the team that got really hot early and then really didn't at the end. But this would not be the first time they go and accumulate a lot of points before Christmas and then just kind of coast on that to safety. Maybe they won't get relegated, but I still don't like Bishwab that much. And I don't know. I think they've been hovering around not quite the Sunderland Swansea vortex, but like hovering around that spot, and they just could be the season they drop into it. Whether that means they get relegated or not, I don't know. But we shall see. But the start really discourages that.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I think Bournemouth squad is like exactly like the 12th best in the league, and then just depending on if King or Wilson are scoring goals, they kind of just shift either a little bit above or a little bit below that. So I really don't mind their squad. What baffles me about Watford, and one of the reasons I put them down so low, is they haven't significantly improved their squad since that first year they got promoted, especially in the back. Like, that back line is still, in theory, not very good at all, and they just keep getting away with it. I think Gray and Deeney is one of the worst strike forces in the Premier League. And, like, we were talking about the upsides of players like Pereira and Hughes, both of whom I think were good signings, but hadn't really worked out thus far. And so just coming in, if those things went poorly and the other things stayed the same, I just didn't see how they were going to contend. But they're getting good performances out of those kind of mercurial players. I think Ben Foster was a huge upgrade in goal. I still don't know how this can be enough, but it may just be one of those weird statistical outliers, and they're just going to be okay just because they're okay and there's not too much behind it. I mean, their manager doesn't really have much of a track record. There's all these things that I thought would really catch up with them haven't thus far. And we'll see, obviously, throughout the year if they do catch up. But I think it's one of the reasons why I expected Bournemouth to be better is, I'm sure you guys saw, Eddie Howe is now the longest tenured manager at one club in the Premier League. And I think he does a good job. I think Lewis Cook is really talented. That Wilson-King duo tends to have goals in it, although Wilson missed a lot of, well, two or three open chances at the weekend, but ended up with two assists via an earned penalty and a shot that went off the post. You know, a real creative player there. I think Watford are a worse team than Bournemouth, but you obviously can't really argue. You really can't argue that in the table, and we'll see where they all end up. But I've been very surprised by Watford, and as much as I should probably just own up to the fact that I had them in the relegation fight and may be wrong, I'm just going to kind of double down and say they'll still end up down there somewhere, because I don't know why they're good. I genuinely don't.
I mean, it's three games. Variance is weird, but like, they could be terrible the rest of the
true.
Season. There's
but they have actually looked good as well.
Yeah, they have.
It's just a very curious case of Watford is what this is for me at the moment. Next up, let's talk about another side that could be facing relegation issues. Newcastle came out against Chelsea today and showed very little interest in actually playing football. I didn't see the end possession stats, but I know at halftime it was basically 80 to 20%.
82%, I think it ended.
Is where it finalized. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. It's the fifth highest in APL history.
Oh, that 82%? That's unsurprising. Yeah. I assume one of those was probably... under Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool team, because it was during that like 2-year period where it was like, if you have possession, you automatically win.
You win every game.
Right. So my question about Benitez's tactics today is really on what you think of that being deployed in the Premier League. When you see a team set up so contrarily to how most fans would expect to see them lined up, to how most managers would ever set up to begin with, do you like it in that it's kind of proof that anyone can play any brand of football that they see fit, or are you a little more antagonized by the fact that a team could set up with such little intent to really play?
Yeah, I mean, I personally think it's completely fine. I think that any team is entitled to play in the way that they want. I feel that, you know, sport, it's all about the tactics. It's all about gaining small advantages over the other team. I mean, obviously, when it's against your team, you feel personally attacked. I know watching that game today, I was not saying some nice things to people like DeAndre Yedlin and Rafa Benitez. But as a Chelsea fan, I can't lie. I've sat through some interesting tactical performances over the last 3 years. One comes to mind against Liverpool, which we won't mention any Gerrard slips. But
whoops.
Yeah.
Good job slipping it in there.
I just had to slip it in.
Yeah.
But I think that it's completely warranted under certain circumstances. Obviously, for just the sake of entertainment, you would like to see every team come out and play to the best of their ability, but you know, I think that the sport is built on, you know, results. And if you look further down the leagues, you know, some teams have to play games like this to literally stay afloat. So I can't see why it should ethically be any different just because it's in the Premier League. I think it's fun.
Yeah, no, I don't love watching it, obviously. I'd rather everyone go insane like Arsenal. But no, ultimately, as a manager, your job is to try and get the best result for your team. And if that's what you believe is the best way to get the best result for your team, then you do it. No questions asked. especially bottom half team, your job is to get the best results, not necessarily to entertain. So yeah, it's completely fine by me. It sucks to watch, but whatever. If that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, as Steven mentioned, it is one of the most frustrating things you can see your team having to face. But yeah, I think I'm of the mind that it is an option. You as the manager, especially recently, are getting less and less control of things. And if you can't control your own tactics, I think that might be a stretch too far. I also wonder if some of that may have been a statement, especially in a home match, about the fact that he was not really backed in the market. I thought Shar was a good signing, but he does give away the penalty, and we can avoid the whole penalty discussion on Alonso, but we will stand by what we've always said on the show. Don't give the referee a chance to make a decision. But I do wonder if there was kind of like an ulterior reason for how defensive they set up and really didn't aim to entertain the home crowd there. But that's really speculative. But I agree. I do think he has every right to set up that way, frustrating as it may be for the neutral or for the opposing fan. All right, and we'll wrap up with something that is far more serious than that, and we do bring this up with the knowledge that none of us actually live in England. But Hugo Lloris was pulled over and cited for drink driving during the week. There's been loads of reports since about whether or not he should be dropped against Manchester United, about whether he should have his captaincy stripped for club and country because of his position as a role model or a leader of the club and community. And I'm just curious to hear, what do you guys think should happen here on the specific line between an off-pitch issue that is very clearly an issue, and we certainly don't condone that in any way, and what its sporting ramifications should be?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a tricky one because you're talking about laws, you're talking about a lot of different kind of professional things, especially, you know, when you come to consider things like contracts in football. You know, they're so specific these days. I'm almost certain that players with reputations have contracts that have these kind of specific clauses written into them to protect them from themselves. But you know, when it comes from obviously someone like Hugo Lloris, is not exactly the kind of guy that you envision to have these kind of issues. So it comes as a shock. I think you know, if this was someone like Hatem Ben Arfa, for example, just to not picking on him, but you know, just someone with a reputation. Just picking on him. You know, someone with a reputation, you may be like, well, yep, there's another one, maybe, and then try and, you know, buckle down on him and try and make an example of him. But someone like Hugo Lloris, who from my memory has a pretty clean record on these sort of things. You wouldn't like to see him, you know, lose the captaincy of his club and country. You'd hope not. I would hope not anyway. Some people might slightly differ opinions. But obviously, you know, there's something as seriously as drink driving, I think, has to pay attention to. And I think that Hugo should come out and make some statements about it, because obviously going into the whole role model thing, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are aware that Marcus Alonso is pretty infamous for being involved with a drink driving incident that actually took a young girl's life. So I think that, you know, nobody's really immune from being pulled into these kind of horrible situations. And I think we're all human. We all make mistakes. But, I think that we should stand up and, I guess, take responsibility and hope Hugo learns from it. And yeah, don't think anything over the top is really required here, but it's worth a debate, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion, like, whatever the club wants to do is valid, whether that's strip captaincy, whether that's drop for a game or two. Whether we want them to be or not, sports players, ultimately, sports players should not be role models, but they are. So, that, you know, people look up to these people, they shouldn't, but they do. And drink driving's very serious. Basically, I don't know if he's going to drop, but I would be like, if they strip his captaincy, that's fine and valid. I would have no issue with that.
Yeah, because as you say, the club do kind of need to make an example, whether or not the courts make an example obviously remains to be seen because, as Steven said, this is still a legal issue as well. On the sporting side, this caused probably more divide in the Tottenham fan base than I saw this whole summer. And this was not an easy summer for the Tottenham fan base.
Why was that?
no reason. But it was interesting to see how many levels people disagreed with this on, both its seriousness as an act, or whether it's not, whether or not that seriousness should have an impact like we're talking about, and again, what the ramifications should be internally. And I'll say on a personal note, that this is basically the quickest way for me to lose respect for somebody. Not unique, but pretty much as soon as you lose somebody due to this, you have basically a zero tolerance policy for people that do drink and drive. But on the sports side, I would not be surprised if we see changes to his roles. I think we may need to kind of take a wait and see approach. It's inarguably illegal. I think if it was the difference between accidentally having an extra glass of wine at dinner versus doing, I don't know, Jaeger shots or something, that somehow that's different. And I don't know whether that's right or not. That's just how it kind of strikes me, especially when it comes to regard of captaincy for club and country. I do agree with Dan, sport figures probably shouldn't be role models, which is something that he and I very much are on the same page on, because we live in the States where if this was all a player did, you'd be like, oh, wow, compared to some of the other people on whatever team, that's really not that bad. But unfortunately, they are. They're in that spotlight. They're viewed as heroes by many, and so do need to be held to a higher standard. And I am thinking that we may see the ramifications on the legal side more than in the club side. Whether or not he should play against Manchester United, I think really depends on if the player's up for it. It's just like during transfer windows, and some players, you know, the managers will just say, we didn't play him because his head wasn't in the right place. That's absolutely fair. I agree with Dan on that point that, you know, at the end of the day, Hugo Lloris is an employee, and a company can react any way they want towards their employee in a situation like this. I know in the States, people can lose their job for DUIs way pre, you know, conviction or anything like that. Time will tell. I think maybe on the stripping captaincy stuff, maybe have a bit more of a wait and see approach. But as Steven said at the top, there's going to be a lot of different opinions on this. And that's just kind of where I stand for now. All right, now we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with questions for each of our guests.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. I will come to you now first, Steven, to talk a little bit about Chelsea. Coming into the season, there were people that genuinely thought Marcos Alonso wouldn't even fit into the starting 11 under Maurizio Sarri, that the tactics eliminating the wingback position would see a significant decrease in his role in the team. What we've seen is literally the opposite of that, especially with the fantasy assists he's picking up that, depending on what site you're on, count them as assists or not. Do you think that Alonso will continue to have this impact for the side, and why do you think so many people were wary coming in?
I think this is probably one of the most interesting points on Chelsea this season. Coming into the season, like you alluded to, Alonso really kind of was expected to be edged out by Emerson Palmieri. And, you know, he still may by the end of the season. Seems a little bit less likely now, but that was the opinion of most Chelsea fans going into the season, mostly because of Emerson Palmieri's exploits going forward for Roma. He's known as a bit more of a traditional attacking fullback, whereas Alonso has played the majority of his career as a centre-back and as a left wing-back. So, yeah, as a traditional fullback, we kind of weren't exactly sure what to expect with Marcus Alonso, but he obviously didn't go to the World Cup, so he was able to have a full pre-season. He came to Perth, where I live, and signed my stuff, so that was good of him. So now I'm a fan of him this season. but yeah, I suppose Alonso is really interesting to me because when I watch him on the ball, sometimes I'm really nervous watching him. He seems to take really heavy touches. He's not one of these guys that you always feel confident when he's kind of taken 2-3 touches. You kind of want him to move it quickly. But then he just has an incredible left foot. Like the way this guy hits volleys or is just able to strike the ball, he's just one of the purest strikers of a ball you will actually see with that left foot. But what's interesting is that Sarri's really managed to, in such a short space of time already, really managed to utilize him as an attacking fullback. He's even just watching, I mean, obviously Newcastle was sitting really deep today, but he was pushing Yedlin back the entire game. And he was getting forward and really helping the attack and helping people like Hazard to move in between the half spaces. And I think he's really going to be a really good attacking outlet this season, which is, like I said, quite surprising to a lot of Chelsea fans. He's obviously an extremely talented player, but I suppose it's a happy surprise because, you know, he's popping up, scoring goals. I think I also read a stat that he until Danny Welbeck scored, he had scored more Premier League goals than Danny Welbeck until this weekend. So, that was quite funny.
Also, sorry about that, Dan. Also, weird pro Danny Welbeck stat. That goal levels him with Gareth Bale for Premier League goals. So, just accidental Danny Welbeck trivia hour here on the
Danny Welbeck, a very elusive figure.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about was Alvaro Morata. He came out of last week's match with the goal saying that he fits into Sarri's system much better than he fit into Conte's, where he doesn't always have to be receiving the ball with his back to net. And some people bought it, some people didn't. Doesn't have the best match today. Worth noting that Newcastle intended to defend from minute one. Do you kind of buy or not the idea that Morata could turn things around in the system?
Yeah, I tend to have a lot, probably too much faith in Morata. I really like him as a player. I think that, you know, he had a tough first season. He started really well, obviously, and then picked up a really nasty back injury, which he kind of tried to play through, and he really, really shouldn't have, mostly because we didn't really have any striking backup that Conte trusted. Obviously had a horrible end to the season. A lot of fans got on his back, for some reasons were warranted. Some, I think, were a bit unwarranted. I do think he can flourish under this system, though. I do have some kind of strange theories about him playing with his back to goal. He still does that quite a bit. He does. He tends to. I think maybe he just needs to get out of this Conte funk that he was in last season, where he's playing with his back to goal the entire time. Because even today, he was trying to hold the ball up, and he was kind of, his touches were heavy. And I think that in Sarri's system, he tends to like a bit more of a poacher with people, you know, like Higuain and Dries Mertens was used a bit more as a poaching forward. I think that Morata maybe isn't perfectly suited to that. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how he fits in going forward. I think that actually someone like Batshuayi may have been better for a Sarri system, but I guess we'll never know now with him going on loan. One key aspect I think that we're really going to miss from Morata this season is I still think he's one of the best headers in the league. It seems the Sarri system that we we put less balls into the box from crosses. And I think that Morata could suffer from that, because I can't remember if it was one or zero of Morata's goals. No, it was definitely at least one. Has been scored with his feet in the Premier League. So it's really quite alarmingly low.
Oh, there was that stretch where like five out of the seven goals you scored in a row were Azpilicueta crosses to Morata's head.
Yeah.
And wasn't that a thing last year? Yeah.
That was totally a thing.
That was definitely
That's the closest I've ever seen to like an NBA-style out-of-timeout play in football, ever. Like, it literally just get Azpilicueta in space, cross, header, goal. Easy.
Yeah. I mean, even that was even on show last week against Arsenal. That was another one where we went from Azpilicueta to Morata, so it's still very much alive. Don't fear. just maybe a little bit differently this season. Yeah, I've got faith, but he hasn't started great this season, I would say, so far, but still time.
Yeah. Speaking of kind of coming to conclusions far too early, Dan, last week the main topic was Arsenal under Unai Emery, and we all granted that you got very tough two fixtures to his era. So we largely said it was too early to panic, but there were still signs of concern, especially in the back line, even after Emery has taken charge, including, like we said, the fact that it was two very difficult opponents. So here's your chance to kind of defend yourself or talk about how you felt about Arsenal since Emery took charge of the club.
I mean, I my opinion has been the only way we're doing anything this season in the league is if our attack goes supernova, because our defense just isn't good enough. Like, our two best center backs, assuming Koscielny is dead, because when you're in your early 30s, an athletic center back, and then tear your Achilles, your career is probably over, at least at the top level. So assuming he's gone, our best two center backs are Mustafi and Socrates. That's not good enough defensively. Monreal is, while he may be the best goal scorer in the history of football, he's probably washed as a fullback. I think the only way we can do anything is if we just go nuts and just play insane attacking games and try and win 6-5 every week.
Are you on that Lacazette, Aubameyang 2 up front tip?
I would love for that to happen, but we're never going to play a diamond, and that's the only way it really fits. So that sucks. So I don't think Unai Emery is the right appointment, because if you want to do that, you're not appointing Unai Emery. But I don't know. It's a thing. I really didn't like how in the second half against Chelsea, he just kind of, I'm assuming this was based on instructions because of a massive change in style, but I didn't like how we seemed to just go super defensive and try and hang on for 2-2, despite the fact that, especially at the end of the first half, we were definitely the ones on the front foot and attacking better than Chelsea. I know our defense was terrible, but we were also cutting through them and at a higher rate. So I didn't like that decision. I think he's a bit too defensive. I think he's a bit too defensive, but we don't have the quality to like work in defense system. Like, if you watch the game against West Ham, we were getting cut apart hilariously. We're still terrible defensively. A bit better after Torreira came on, but that also coincided with Arnautovic going off. So I don't know if that was, which was the catalyst to that happening. But like, we're just not a good defensive team, and Emery, I think, is a bit too defensive a manager for that. And I guess he could train us to be better, but I don't really see that happening. Like, we're really bad defensively. We have a bad goalkeeper, two terrible center backs, or at least not good. Bellerin has been fantastic attacking from right back so far this season, but he's had to spend most of his time attacking. Kolasinac is hurt. Maitland-Niles is not really a left back, but he's hurt too. Like I said, Monreal, while being the best goal scorer in the world, is probably washed. So I think he has too defensive a style for the personnel we have right now. So that's not great.
Yeah, and obviously we'll see how it develops, but interesting that you kind of echo the same concerns that we were thinking could be problematic throughout the season. You mentioned Torreira there. It seems like the internet fandom of Arsenal all just wanted to be Torreira next to Guendouzi pretty much immediately, although I don't think many expected Guendouzi to actually break into the 11, let alone week one. Would you like to see that pairing in the midfield, and would you be concerned at all about the inexperience that they would have?
I would be concerned about the inexperience as much as well. As I've become more conflicted about Granit Xhaka than I thought I would, because Mike Goodman point of Stats Bomb and stuff of other places as well, but pointed out that Granit Xhaka was like a top five ball progressor in the Premier League last season. And if you watch us without him, we are much worse at moving the ball, which is something I never really thought of. I never really thought of it being a him thing. I thought it was more of a systemic thing, but it could be a him thing. And well, is it Gwen? It's one game, but Guendouzi was not great against West Ham. So I definitely want to be Torreira, and then it's either Xhaka or Guendouzi. I'm not really sure which I want yet. I want Guendouzi to work out because Xhaka has some really, really bad flaws, and he is legitimately terrible defending, which is not great. But he does bring a lot to the table going forward. And if Guendouzi can match that, then I absolutely want him over Xhaka. I'm just, you know, we have to see if he can.
All right, and just like the Unai Emery stuff, time will tell here. But I agree that I think that's probably the more talented duo. But Xhaka, it's interesting how over time people's assumption of how good they could be tends to diminish. If he got his game right, I mean, you know, this is a player that came into the Premier League with much hype. It was a player that I, as a Tottenham fan, was worried that you were getting. Unfortunately, he's turned into a worry more for the Arsenal fans than for the rivals.
Well, I think Xhaka has some like fatal flaws that he can't fix. Yeah. He's just extremely one-footed. He's very slow.
And that, to be fair, I don't think we would have noticed a lot of them until he was in a league like the Premier League.
Yeah. Also, I think the system of Gladbach suited him very well. Three defenders behind him as well as the two midfielders surrounding him. He was very much, not to call him Pirlo, but you know, that kind of role where he just passes and everyone else does the stuff around him. And so he looked good there. Here, on our, like, he was not provided enough protection, which, I mean, I'm not sure if he's good enough to warrant all that. But, I think the issue with Xhaka is he has some fatal flaws, but he can't fix. He's extremely one-footed, he's very slow, and he's not press-resistant. Like, he's really, really easy to press, which Guendouzi, he doesn't have any of those, which is why, like I said, if he can provide the ball progression Xhaka can, I absolutely want him starting over, because there's less obvious, like, flaws in his game. But, again, if he's only 19. We've only seen a few games of him. If he can't provide the ball progression that Xhaka does, then Xhaka does bring something to the table he doesn't, and we'll see if he's actually better.
Yeah.
Really quickly, Dan, I just wanted to get your take really quickly on the Ozil situation. Do you put much stock in these rumors about a feud? Or
From the only place I've seen it sourced is ESPN Brazil. If it comes out of a more reliable source, we'll talk. But he's had this illness thing for a while. Like, he genuinely seems to. Whether all of this is, I don't know. But like, this isn't a new thing, and it hasn't come out of a good source. So until it does, I'm going to assume it's not real.
Arsenal Fan TV, not a reliable source. Noted.
Shockingly enough, no, I don't think they're reliable. Their rebrand is because they got a cease and desist letter, apparently.
Oh, really?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Someone looked up or found, I think they found a letter online because, you know, it had to be filed. That's why they're now AF, whatever it is, AFTV or AFTV, media or something.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, they were using the brand to generate for themselves, much like how we're the EPL roundtable of EPL Index, is to avoid things like that. And I will say, sorry, this is just a real deep cut / shout out. I miss the West Ham fan that during our first season tweeted back to every show posting that there's no E in Premier League, which is both inaccurate. There are many E's in the words Premier League. But it was honestly, when we lost him, it was like, oh, part of the tradition's gone. So anyway, if you're out there still, we miss you in our own weird way.
So it's appreciated.
Yeah. Now we're going to push on into Player Watch. Now, as some may know, hopefully all, but if not, you're about to, the European window is still open until the 31st. Obviously, the Premier League one closed quite some time ago. Are there any players at your clubs that you're worried may still find the exit before that window closes?
Yeah, at Chelsea right now, there's obviously... The infamous loan army is always looking to offload guys. There's three guys that looked up until this week to be potentially on move with loans. That was Michael Hector, Lucas Piazon, who both apparently are being linked to Leeds right now. So we may, I'm not sure if they're able to take them on loan. That seems likely. But Ruben Loftus-Cheek was also rumored to being looked at by like people like Sevilla and Lyon and some teams in the Bundesliga. But Sarri came out this week and pretty much hush-hushed all that, said that no, he's going to be with the squad till January. He wants to assess all his options, and he's sure that he'll get a lot of time playing time this season, whether that be in the Europa League or in the Premier League or any other competitions. So no, at Chelsea right now, seems like we're pretty much on lockdown from selling anyone. If anyone sees Real Madrid coming within 10 feet of us, I want them away. There is no Eden Hazard at Chelsea. I don't know what they're asking about. It's not for sale, ever.
I don't think I'm worried about any Arsenal players leaving. At least not worried. Like, people could leave. I'm just not worried. at this point, Aaron Ramsey's probably the best player could leave. And if we can't get a contract sorted for him, I'd rather get something for him and send him away from the Premier League than him leave on a free to who knows where. I don't think that'll happen. I think he's winding his contract down to leverage us like Theo Walcott and Mesut Ozil have. He's my best player could leave. There are some players I want to leave, like Danny Welbeck would be great. I doubt he'll leave because he probably won't leave the country. And while I don't think he's the best player, he's way too good for the championship. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, for Tottenham, we could still see some. Cameron Carter-Vickers just left on loan for Swansea. Need it. Samuel Shashua, who I'm sure none of you have ever heard of, went to the third division in Spain. But really, this is probably what we'll see. It's just kind of a trickle of loanees heading out. The interest in Llorente has allegedly picked up in Spain again, just because he's a tall person that at one point was good and scored goals. I think we'd struggle to sell him at the moment with us not being able to offload Janssen because he suffered a leg injury. And so he won't recover till December. So the ability to either loan or sell him looks less likely. I don't really think any of the big ones will go. The interest in Sissoko in Italy seems to have dropped. Funnily enough, the club that at one point were most interested in him were Inter. And then they decided to sign Nainggolan instead of Sissoko, which, yep. Absolutely. Why would you not do that? So his market seems to have dried up as well. The only high profile thing at all that's been mentioned is potentially either Barcelona or Madrid making a late bid for Christian Eriksen, which is kind of linked up concerningly with Eriksen not signing his extension, which previously looked like it was basically all but signed. I don't think there's really anything to this, but probably worth noting just because of the scope of that if it did actually happen. But it looks like Toby and Danny Rose are both staying, which a lot of people were worried about. I had mentioned in June that with United the only actual suitor for Toby, we may be forced with this unhappy marriage where he's stuck with us, we're going to use him while he's here, and then kind of like what Dan was saying earlier, he could leave next year for $25 million. That's what's happened. And I think we're a better club for this season, keeping both Toby and Rose than we are without them, even if it means it costs us money in the long run, which doesn't really matter because we don't sign anyone anyway. It really looks like it'll be a slow trickle of maybe loanees, but no real bites on any of our higher profile players. All right, and now we will head into match previews, where we'll quickly discuss our upcoming fixtures in the Premier League. We'll lead in with you, Stephen. I just realized that these chronologically match the order we were already going in, and that's weirdly pleasing. So we'll start with you talking about your upcoming match against Bournemouth.
Yep, so obviously Bournemouth in some pretty decent form to start the season, so obviously can't overlook them at all. They're a team that likes to play a bit more attackingly than Newcastle, so maybe we'll be able to play our expansive football and maybe create some more chances than today's game. I do, obviously, going into it at home, going to be expecting a win. Now with people like Eden Hazard with a full 90 underneath him, and Kovacic getting the start today, hopefully you get to see a full 90 from him next week. Really looking forward to seeing this team kind of build over the next couple of games. I think we got three more games until we play Liverpool. at home, which is kind of our next big test in the Premier League, out of the top six teams, obviously. So yeah, it'd be kind of obviously take every game as it comes. But yeah, I'm be expecting 3 points out of that game, I think it's fair to say. And my wish for that game would be for Eden Hazard to score another goal and hopefully get Morata, keep scoring, get that confidence high.
Yeah, we play Cardiff this week. The West Ham game was the beginning of an 8-game stretch. We don't play anyone in the top six, which is fair considering we started with two of the top six. But yeah, we really, looking at it, we probably need around at least 20, 21 points from that 8-game stretch. We got 3 against West Ham. Made it harder than it probably should have been, but we did. And Cardiff are arguably the worst team in the Premier League right now. Them and Huddersfield are like the two that everyone seems to kind of be okay with accepting that they're probably going to go down, or they're the two favorites to go down. Ultimately, our bet, like, we need to win this game. It's extremely simple. We're better than them. We should beat them, though we are terrible away from home. That was a massive problem last year. And Unai Emery isn't good away from home either. So, yeah, we'll see how that actually goes.
Yeah, and for Tottenham, we're going to have to face that very hot Watford team away at Vicarage Road. It is worth noting that Tottenham have largely put Watford to the sword every time we face them in the Premier League. A couple of late winners tossed in there for just a little variety. But we have typically had the better of them in the past, and so it'll be really interesting to see if they can continue this hot streak that they've had. Against us, obviously a lot of turmoil going on at Tottenham right now, and we've recorded this before the Manchester United match, so really hard to draw kind of a trend line for Tottenham, although the first two wins, obviously great because we got the points. The Newcastle match, not so convincing. The Fulham one, very convincing. So we'll just kind of see how that develops going forward. But all in all, I think we match up with them well, where their wingbacks both want to be attacking constantly, and Janmaat and Holebas, which should open up a lot of space behind them. I mean, the idea of what Lucas could do to Holebas, I think, is a filthy, filthy thought. And we'll see how Kane looks against United. After the Newcastle match, I was saying I was still worried he was still dealing with the injury through the whole World Cup process, that he just made it back for that Chelsea match in March. But then he looked fully back against Fulham. So we'll see if he's really back. Like I'm saying, it's kind of hard to preview a match two matches away. But all in all, I think we'll match up with them well and come away with a win on the day and kind of put an end to this early hot streak here from Watford. All right, a little bit shorter from us today, but that will do it for us. So if you'd like to tell folks where they can find you or any projects you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, like I said at the start, guys, my name's Stephen Clark. You can find me on Twitter at Stephen Clark CFC. We're chatting all things Chelsea. Writing for Londoners Blue, the great Chelsea podcast, guys. They just recently did an interview with Cesar Azpilicueta. So if you're interested in that, check that out. But yeah, that's me.
Yeah, and I'm Dan. You can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits, where you will see mostly dogs because all Arsenal do is concede nowadays. But hey, that's not a bad thing, is it? Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Those dog pictures are mad cute, and I'll always defend you on that. I'm Kevin DeVries, the host, obviously. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You should also check out our shows, the FPL Roundtable and Championship Roundtables, both with excellent content there. I also write about fantasy for Goal, so you can go head over there to Goal Gaming. And I also do live text commentaries through Omnisport. And I think that's it. Pretty light load for me thus far this season. But anyway, thanks to you guys so much for coming on. It was definitely a pleasure. And those at home, we hope you keep listening.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.